So before we get started, a couple things just for your interest. The rector at Falls Church Episcopal is moving. I believe next Sunday is his last week, John Omer. John has done remarkable work at the Falls Church Episcopal. You can recall a few years ago they went through a horrible split in their congregation. So he has been the one that really has revived that church back again, and he's leaving. He has taken a position in Asheville, North Carolina. The Episcopal Church has a cathedral there. It's very, it was built by Mr. Biltmore. Biltmore Mansion is down there, and so Mr. Biltmore was a good Episcopalian, built this nice cathedral there. So he'll be the interim dean of that. I don't know what further there is for him, but we give thanks for his ministry here in the city of Falls Church. Our church was built in 1869. We worshiped as a congregation at the Falls Church Episcopal from 1867 to 1869, about 2 years when we didn't have a church. We used their space down there a long time ago, so we have a nice tie with them. Then it's interesting, if you've read the Falls Church News Press, there is what I call a steeple war going on in the city of Falls Church, and it's just been kind of fun to read this article. So Columbia Baptist is getting ready. They're raising money. They're going to be tearing down their sanctuary and a bunch of their building and building a huge new facility there. Their current sanctuary seats 700. They're going to build a sanctuary for about 1,400 people. It's going to be really big. So they want to put on a steeple to that church, and they want it to be 120 feet. And in the city of Falls Church, there was a regulation that something couldn't be over 70 feet. And then last year, the regulation was changed. And you'll know that what is the church across the street from Columbia Baptist? Christ Crossman is there, and they have a steeple as well. So I will read you portions of this. It's just, for me, it's very hilarious. The Falls Church Planning Commission voted unanimously Monday night to forward its okay to a zoning variance that would permit a new 120-foot high steeple to rise above a new Columbia Baptist Church building on North Washington Street. The current code is 70 feet, though the church's present steeple is higher than that, and the steeple of the Christ Crossman Methodist Church across the street is 107 feet. Then it says, as for the steeple, if approved, its top would become the second highest point in the city next to the radio tower adjacent to the Falls Church Episcopal behind Tower Square. Then it says, Planning Commission Chair Andy Rankin shared the view of others on the board that his only objection to the higher steeple would be if the Crossman Church across the street protested. Columbia representatives said they had been in touch with Crossman people and they're okay with it. So I'm glad that, you know, we don't have to have steeple wars in the city of Falls Church, but just kind of let you know what's going on. It's going to be a tremendous building that they're going to put up over there. Of course, they've got to raise the money first, so we'll see. So we're looking at the story of the 10 lepers. Amid the various ecclesiastical, ethical, and liturgical reforms of the 16th century, Martin Luther, the great Lutheran reformer, was asked to describe the nature of true worship. His answer, the 10th leper turning back to give thanks. Martin Luther knew his Bible. So here is Martin Luther, who is making all of these reforms and changes in the Roman Catholic Church to form what we know now as the Lutheran Church. And people are going to Martin Luther saying, you're doing all these things, but what is true worship to you? And he uses this parable. He says, the 10th leper who came back to give thanks to Jesus is worship. So that's what we're going to look at today. In today's passage from Luke, Jesus is on a road trip, moving between Samaria and Galilee, and he's on the way to the city of Jerusalem. And as he enters the village, 10 lepers approach him and call from a distance. Why do they have to call from a distance? They were unclean. Lepers of the day would wear bells around their necks so that wherever they walked, people would hear their bells and they would run away because they were afraid that they would get the disease. They were shunned. They were unclean. No one wanted to have anything to do with lepers. So they call from a distance to Jesus. And they say, "Jesus, have mercy on us." They are desperate for healing. Jesus sees them. And Jesus has mercy for them. And so he gives them a rather unusual command. He says to them, "Go and show yourselves to the priests." And to us, that may sound odd. Go and show yourselves to the priest. But the way it worked in Jewish way of life then was it was the priest who would pronounce that you were once again clean and could be part of the community. You could now come to synagogue and worship. So Jesus has healed these 10 lepers. And then he says, "Now go to the priest and show him your skin, show him your hands, show him your legs, your face, your scalp, show him all, and let them know that you have been cleansed, you have been healed." And then the priest says, "Yes, you were healed. Now you can come back into the community. You have been made clean." So what happens is we have 9 Jews and 1 Samaritan who are the lepers. The 9 Jews, they say, "Well, thank you, priest, very much," and they go on their way. But what does the Samaritan do? The Samaritan we would least expect. The priest says, "You are clean." And Samaritan leper, the 10th, goes back to Jesus. And he bows in front of Jesus and he worships Jesus. And says, "Jesus, thank you so much for healing me." And Jesus asks a funny question. He says, "Well, where are the other 9? Where are the other 9? Didn't I heal 10? Where are the other 9? And Jesus thinks, "Well, you know, they're doing what I told them to do. And that was it. They're done." But here is this Samaritan who, just because of who he was not well liked. He was treated as a second-class citizen. No one cared about him. He lived in the wrong region. He had the wrong religion. He had the wrong race. There was nothing about Samaritans that Jews liked. And yet here was this leper who expressed his gratitude and love and devotion to Jesus because of what Jesus had done to him. And that, my friends, is true worship. And that is what Martin Luther was trying to say to those persons that asked him the questions. What is true worship? When this 10th leper bowed down and worshiped Jesus and give thanks, not only for the healing of his body, but for the healing of his soul. His soul was healed as well. And for that, he gave 10%, that's not good percentage of people giving thanks. But, you know, I kind of think about how we live in our fast-paced society, especially up here in Northern Virginia. And we have Brandon Mock, who's going to be joining our staff in January. And he's down in Roanoke. And I've said, "Now, Brandon, the pace of life is different here than compared to Roanoke." And we become so fast-paced in our lives that we forget to say thank you. Simple gestures, we just let it go. Big gestures, we just let it go. We may say thank you to ourselves, but do we outwardly say thank you? Think about the last time we said thank you to somebody. When is the last time that we took time to write a note and address it and put a stamp and put it in the post office box? When is the last time we can remember doing that? When is the last time that we sent an email just to say thank you? When is the last time we called somebody up and said thank you? So you've got your little sheet here. I want you to take it out. And we're going to sing the front of it in a minute, but we're going to do a little exercise on the back. And so everybody needs a pew pencil or your pen or whatever it may be. So everybody's going to get your little pew pencil out. And I'll tell you the three things we're going to do on our little sheet of paper, and this is for you to do. And whether you do it or not, it's between you and God. I can't do anything for you. I want you to think about somebody who has done something for you that you need to say thank you. So think of their name. Think of what they did for you. That's number two. And number three, how are you going to express thanks? An example, I don't know. Somebody brought you a cake. So you would write the person's name. Such and so brought me a cake. And how am I going to thank them? I'm going to send them an email. I'm going to send them a note. So think about somebody who has done something for you that you need to offer thanks to. So write their name. Write down what they did for you, number two. And number three, how are you going to thank them? And then you can take this paper home with you. And let's try sometime during the week to express that thanks. And the reason is this. That person may be having one of the worst days of their life. That person may feel that they have been treated unfairly that day. But you know what? You reaching out and saying thank you can change a person's day around completely. It's all about healing. It's all about love. It's all about our soul. So let's take a moment, and then I'm going to leave you alone. The name of the person who did something that you want to thank. Number two, what did they do for you? And number three, how are you going to show your thanks? And then I hope that this week sometime you can put into action with our hands and feet to show thanks, all right? Then the next thing we're going to do is Mary Matier has a friend who wrote on the other side the words to this hymn, 10 Who Suffered Sought Out Jesus. They're wonderful words. They're fresh for us. So we're going to sing this as a congregation together. The choir and I rehearsed it over the week. I think you know the melody that we're going to sing it to. Beth McMartin's going to come up here and help lead us in that. And we can remain seated, but we're going to sing this hymn together as a congregation. All right? I think where I'll put it. Here it is.
Our homes, our work, our play, or Christmas.